The Fan on Demand. Go ahead, lounge around in bed with a good magazine. We'll even read it to you. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Live. On Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis, along with Ben Nicholson-Smith and Craig Battle of Sportsnet Magazine. Good to have you with me, gents. Lots to get to today. Blue Jays stink. American League wild card going berserk. The Tigers stink as well. And they did a little bit more to try and improve their team at the non-waiver trade deadline. Also, the Premier League season getting underway. Morning show producer Ryan Favreau is probably weeping into his cereal this morning because Manchester United just lost to Swansea. Also, the NBA season right around the corner. Drake is fined, and the Raptors release their schedule. Also, a little bit into the new commissioner of baseball. All that coming up in the next 2 hours between 10 and noon. But guys, let's start with all those sad sack Blue Jays right now. At least they are on the road. They've lost seven straight road games. Yesterday, 11-5 to the White Sox. Marcus Stroman, I mean, there's not enough positive praise we can give him for his job this year. But this is what happens with 23-year-old starting pitchers, right? They're learning on the job, so maybe we shouldn't be surprised that there are a few bumps in the road.
Definitely. I mean, you're going to have some outings where you're just not at your best. And Stroman's been so good for the Blue Jays this year, but yesterday wasn't his night. And you can't fault him for it. It was ugly, but now the Blue Jays just have to move on, and they really do need to put some wins together, I think.
He also had a really rough first inning there. Like, I don't think that you can chalk that up entirely to his performance.
Yeah, he was a little dinked and doinked, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. And, you know, the balk and, you know, the hit batsman, that sort of stuff. Like, I mean, come on. Like, that stuff happens every once in a while, and it just was happening in the first inning, and it piled up on him, and, you know, like quicksand.
Yeah, it almost raises that question, and I was one of those guys that defended the Blue Jays' lack of activity at the non-waiver trade deadline. I thought there was too much given up to pick up Andrew Miller, and they weren't going to be in the conversation for either of those aces. And, I mean, you're going to give up a couple of guys off your roster and Marcus Stroman and maybe Brett Laurie and somebody else for David Price. I don't think so. And John Lester, you just have him for a couple of months here. It doesn't guarantee you anything. But there were other pieces maybe to be had. I mean, Brandon McCarthy, the Yankees pick him up. He's been spectacular, and maybe you can point to the fact, well, he was terrible before he got to New York. But anyone that's even into the slightest little bit of advanced metrics could tell you that he was due to turn it around and has. And it's not like you had a starter like that. Who would you have taken out of the rotation? But at least it gives you a bit of a safety net here because you're dealing with some young pitchers, and this kind of stuff is going to happen.
Absolutely, and I think right now the Blue Jays are a different team than what we would have expected coming into the year, and that Stroman and Sanchez, and hopefully in the next little while we'll get the chance to watch Daniel Norris, but these guys are young guns. They're going to have their ups and downs. It's a lot of fun when everything goes right, but that's not always going to happen for this team. So I do think that, you know, you're right in saying that this is a team that really does need to take basically what it has, because they didn't go out and add. They had that chance to do it, but right now they're relying on what they have internally, because you can't upgrade that easily this time of year.
Right, and you know, a young pitcher is going to have a bad moment. But and then I was at the Jays game the other week when Drew Hutchinson completely destroyed Baltimore Orioles.
Yeah,
and you need those moments. You need to have you know, your guys, and you don't want Brandon McCarthy coming in and pushing out Drew Hutchinson and having him not have that opportunity to build that confidence heading into next season, because he's going to be here, you know, for the next Jays run and the next Jays run, and you want him to have that moment.
Here's the situation for the Blue Jays right now. 7.5 games back of the American League East lead and 4 games now back of that second wild card spot occupied by the Seattle Mariners. And yes, the Detroit Tigers are on the outside of the playoff picture looking in, which is hilarious, at least to me. And we'll get a little bit more into the other teams in the American League wild card chase at 11 o'clock, 11:02. But Blue Jays are 4 games back, okay? That's only a game and a half ahead of the Tampa Bay Rays. There's a bunch of teams clogged up in that 4 to 6 games back of the second wild card range. Craig, should Blue Jays fans I mean, be freaking out. Should they be looking at that moment there where they were, you know, half game back and they were battling and they went into that three game set against the Mariners? They were right in it then. Was that as close as this team is going to get to playing meaningful baseball down the stretch?
I kind of hate to say it, but I feel like they missed their moment. You know, this four game losing streak came at the absolute worst time. The panic is setting in. You can see it on the faces. I mean, they've got the Yankees a half game behind them. They've got the Cleveland Indians another game behind them, right? Like, this is they're in that sort of middle ground of, or sort of, you know, not being in with Detroit and Seattle and the Angels. And they're going to see that, and that's going to sort of factor in as they head into every game. They have a bad first inning and they collapse, right? I don't know. I don't see them coming out of it. And yeah, like they're you know, the four game losing streak is not something that you want this time of the season when they're supposed to be playing these meaningful games in August.
The margin for error is just, it's non-existent, Ben.
It is. And I think that being said, we have 39 games to watch from this team. Mm-hmm. And
what do they have to go? What's the record they need in these 39 games?
Well, you probably want to go something like 27-12.
You want to go like 40-1, right?
If you want to get to, right, exactly. I mean, you want to get to the 90 win mark or close to it, because yeah, with so many teams close, I think you make a great point in raising the Tampa Bay Rays, but so many teams are in the mix, the Indians, the Tigers, the Yankees, of course, the Royals. And at this point, if you need to pass a lot of those teams, you're not going to get there with 85 wins, not with 86. I think you got to be 89, 90 wins. And that's not an easy thing to do. You have to win basically twice as many games as you lose.
This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Ben Nicholson-Smith, Craig Battle. I'm Ben Ennis. So you look at this team and the possibility of them going on that type of run. They have been streaky. I mean, remember that little stretch there after the All-Star break? They had won four straight series. It was all rosy for this team, and then they lost three straight in Houston and kind of been not so great since then. And then you look back at May, how great things were in May. And the big key for May, I mean, this pitching staff was pretty similar to what it is right now. The key for May was that they were just pounding everybody into oblivion offensively. That offense was on fire. And, you know, Anthony Gose was a big part of that as well. He's no longer with this team, option down. But Edwin Encarnacion and Adam Lind are back. So maybe there is a possibility of getting back to those free-swinging, good time offensive ways for this Blue Jays team.
Well, I think as much as it's fun to watch Stroman and Sanchez and these young arms, this is an offensive team,
yeah,
and that's their strength. Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Bautista, two of the best right-handed bats you're going to find in Major League Baseball, and you have some supplementary pieces as well with Adam Lind, who's now back. You have some guys who can hit the ball, and I think that's what this team really has to be going forward.
They are. I mean, but they're not unlike the Baltimore Orioles, right? Like, you don't look at the Orioles and say, oh, well, that's a team that just outpitch you. They're not the Seattle Mariners. The Seattle Mariners are that team that's always searching for offense and always going to shut you down with their pitching. When this Blue Jays offense is healthy, though, I put it up against anybody in all of baseball. Edwin Encarnacion, Adam Lind back in the lineup, and if you have to play Juan Francisco, put him down in the eight hole. That changes his game a little bit, but right now, the way this offense is constituted, and of course, a lot of that is reliant upon Edwin Encarnacion being the player he was when he went down with that injury. But Craig, I mean, this should be a good offensive club, shouldn't it?
And it has been hitting. You know, the problem with the Jays lately has been the scoring of the runs, right? Like before the game last night, the Jay Central, they threw up a stat, and they basically had, like, I think 206 runners left on base.
Like, yes. You know,
so over the, like, basically most in the league over the last little stretch, they haven't been able to knock guys in. They've been getting on base, but they haven't been, you know, scoring the runs. And so I think, you know, going forward, they're just going to have to basically be able to sort of knock those guys in.
How do you do that, though? And this is a conversation I have with Kevin Barker when I talk to him on Baseball Central, or just, you know, former players. And you try and quantify clutch or hitting with runners in scoring position. And you look at numbers, and you talk to anybody that's reviewed numbers on this stuff, and clutch doesn't exist. I mean, you can be clutch for a season, but it's not a repeatable skill, I don't think.
Right.
But then again, you look at, is it just dumb, stupid, horrible luck that the Blue Jays just haven't gotten the hits with runners in scoring position?
Well, I think it figures in. And you look at the teams that are doing well right now, the Royals rising to the top of the AL Central, you have Baltimore, and these teams are getting good sequencing. I mean, maybe luck is the wrong word for it, but one way or another, they're getting hits when it matters. I agree with you completely. It's not a repeatable skill. It's not something that you can count on. But if it happens, bank it. Put those wins aside. Score those runs. That's great. And it's just something that the Jays haven't had recently.
So, okay, maybe this is a luck thing that we should be talking more about. And I hate to be that sad sack Toronto sports fan guy. But honestly, when you're looking at a playoff drought that's now going past 20 years, you would think that 1 year it would just all come together. Like the Baltimore Orioles, it just all came together again this year for the second time in 3 years. They won all those one-run games a couple of years ago. Magical season. How can the Blue Jays in 21 years not have had that magical season where they are getting the hits with two outs and runners in scoring position? Explain luck to me, Craig. Why isn't this happening?
I have no idea. Honestly, look at a game like last night where they actually do score six runs. They get four runs in the first two innings. That's a game that, so it's a winnable game, right? But then they give up 11, you know?
Like right.
A couple of weeks ago, Jay Happ puts together the best pitching performance of the season. He gives up only two runs. The Jays don't score at all. It's one of these things. You said it before, sequencing. Like, you need the runs at the right time. You can't just score runs in a vacuum because, you know, I mean, it's amazing the way, yeah, like, the you got to do it at the right time. And that comes down to weird randomness, not clutch hitting.
So this team is cursed, is what you're saying.
Yeah, totally cursed. Yeah, there's something out there. Yeah.
That being said, they're a good run away from being right back in it. And everybody that they are chasing is flawed in some way. I think that John Gibbons, for the most part, has done a very good job, especially with what he's been given. Hasn't been the greatest pieces he's been given at certain points this year. But for the life of me, Ben, explain why the Blue Jays have figured out Danny Valencia and he has a chance against right-handed pitchers, because this is a guy who has almost 1,000 career plate appearances against righties and his on base is like 260 against righties. Why do they keep running him out there?
Because they don't have a better option. And I think that if Laurie is there, there's no chance Valencia is out there. Like you said, he doesn't hit right-handed pitching. I think his OPS is somewhere in the 620 range, just not even close to good enough. But you know, Juan Francisco and Anthopoulos told you and Mike Wilner this on the station yesterday, but he's not a guy who is consistent in the least. I mean, he is not a good defensive player, doesn't hit left-handed pitching. Even against righties, it can be hit and miss. You're waiting for that big outburst. So I think the Blue Jays right now are searching for that option, and to have to search in the midst of a pennant race at second base, at third base, in the bullpen, these are problems that have nothing to do with luck. It's a question of talent on the roster in some cases and depth, and they just aren't having that success right now.
Should they have made a better effort to address that at the non-waiver trade deadline? Is there still time? I mean, we generally see a few moves made here in August, and we saw John Axford move to the Pittsburgh Pirates. And Alex, you mentioned, he was on with Mike and I yesterday morning, did say put in a couple of claims on guys and nothing's happened, and they're not going to move anybody off the 25-man, and you don't have to put guys on recallable waivers that are even on the 40-man but not on the 25-man. So there's still a possibility of a move there. But is there a move to be made? I don't know who that guy is, that infield guy that, I mean, Martin Prado could have been that guy, but I just don't know if that move is a makeable one right now.
Right, and you look at this team, you want to see potentially a second baseman. I think they could use some relief help. There's no question there. It's a question of what you can get done in August. And no one is going to question Anthopoulos' work ethic, his efforts that he puts in. But at some point, it comes down to results. And they didn't make an acquisition last offseason, not at the trade deadline. I think that there was a move to be made there. That's not to say this team can't win it. Like you said, they're in the mix. But if there's an upgrade to be made in the next couple of weeks, I think the Jays will go after that. And it's probably a move worth making.
Big news. After that non-waiver trade deadline passed and the Blue Jays did nothing, was that Jose Bautista and Casey Jansen came out and ripped Alex Anthopoulos, made waves everywhere, and everybody had a take on it. And the Blue Jays came out that night and won. Jose Bautista hit a home run. Casey Jansen locked down the save. And everybody said, see, these are the guys that are going to, you know, their comments aren't going to affect their play down the stretch because they're going to actually come out and feel like they have something to prove. Well, here's the reality. Since that game, and including that win, Blue Jays are 4-10 since Jose Bautista and Casey Jansen came out and, I don't even want to say ripped Alex Anthopoulos, just made their thoughts known that they thought something should have been done, and looked around and saw the Baltimore Orioles adding to their team, saw the New York Yankees adding to their team, and they saw the Blue Jays not doing a whole lot, although they did pick up Danny Valencia in a trade a couple of days earlier, and optics might have looked a little bit better if that had happened at the deadline, and maybe the conversation wouldn't have been so negative towards Alex Anthopoulos and the Blue Jays. But fact remains, they've had a terrible record since those guys came out and made those comments. And Craig, I don't know if in baseball chemistry can be as effective at either adding wins or sending a team down the toilet as it can in football when you've got so many more guys and it's more of a team sport. I mean, baseball really is an individual sport masquerading as a team sport. But is it possible that this team has a bit of a chemistry issue right now?
I don't know. You know, we see that there are definitely sort of cliques. There's factions in this team that don't necessarily always seem like they're fully together. But I never bought that idea that chemistry affects a baseball team the same way it would a basketball team where you all need to be sort of like one working whole.
You pass the ball to someone else, right? In baseball, you don't. The only time you do it is on defense when you're starting a double play or something. But it's not like there's team play really prevalent in baseball.
Yeah, communication is so much simpler, and there's less of it on the field and in the field of play. I mean, Jansen and Bautista, it felt like a calculated move at the time that they were trying to spur on either something. They were trying to spur on, front office, or they were trying to say, okay, well, this is the team going forward, and we really need to do something. We need to play angry. We need to do something. But I don't know that these guys need any more motivation. Like, I don't get the sense that they don't want to win or that they don't know how to win. It's just coming down to not making the right play at the right time, you know, not through any fault of their own. It's just sort of, like we talked about before, it's randomness, it's luck, it's the curse.
Do you agree with that, Ben? Is it just a freak thing that they've gone 4-10 since those comments or has that lingered? Because don't forget, I feel like people have kind of maybe not talked enough about this. Those comments were basically condemnation of some of the crappier players on this team. It's like, right. Look, this guy stinks. Like Juan Francisco is playing a big part on this team, but you couldn't have made an upgrade there.
Right.
Is sort of not exactly what Jose Bautista and Casey Jansen were saying. It was just that, hey, we can make improvements. And I look around, there's areas where we can improve. And he's talking to some of those guys on this team.
Absolutely. And I think anytime you have a player who's saying, oh, we should go out and make a deal at the deadline, you're talking about taking the job and the service time and everything else of one of the players on that roster in that clubhouse. So that was one thing that the Blue Jays wanted. I think there was a serious case to be made that the Blue Jays could have upgraded with a reliever, with an infielder. Didn't happen. Okay, you move on. And I don't think that the 4-10 record since then is anything all that meaningful. I'm sure that when we look at the final 2 months of the season, 6 weeks from now, the Blue Jays are probably going to be a little bit better than 500, which is what we've seen from them all year. I think that's probably who they are as a team. A good team, not a great team.
They're not going to have a 250 winning percentage the rest of the year.
Exactly. I think they're better than that, no question. And it's just a question of really righting the ship, which is what they need to do right now to get back in the race and really make this interesting for the next 6 weeks.
I don't know. You see in other sports where, Jose Bautista essentially throws some of his teammates under the bus, like he's not so subtly pointing at certain guys. But you see it in basketball where Kobe Bryant will do that, in the midst of a practice. He'll do it after a game,
He will scream at guys in the huddle.
Yeah, he'll dunk on you and then stand over you, like his own teammates. But, for a certain teammate, like Michael Jordan was apparently famous for, treating guys like that, but getting the best out of them, like he would challenge you, he would laugh in your face, and then you'd go, okay, well, I got to be better for Michael Jordan, or I don't want that to happen again. But it seems like a guy like Juan Francisco just doesn't respond to that, like in this case, it just didn't work out the same way. Like he's batting 63 in August, 63.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's not good. And when he's not going good, it's a lot of strikeouts and a lot of strikeouts swinging at pitches, breaking balls specifically, that are in the dirt. Let's look forward a little bit because the Blue Jays now, they have 39 games left in the regular season, which is depressing. The X has already started, and it feels like fall. I don't understand what's happening with the weather. But before I get too depressed, Blue Jays have 39 games left. Now, 20 of them are against teams with 500 records or below. You would think that would favor this team. Well, they just lost one of those games to the White Sox, game one of the series. They still have two left against the White Sox. They've got two in Milwaukee, and then they return home for a 9-game homestand, and it's, as usually takes place late in the season, you play a lot of interdivisional games. They've got Tampa Bay, Boston, the Yankees, a lot of Tampa Bay, a lot of Boston, Orioles, 6 more games as well, and they do have a 4-game set against the Mariners still to come this season. You would think, well, the Rays have been terrible this season. Those should be easy, winnable games. Have you seen the Tampa Bay Rays recently? Playing a whole lot better. They're back at 500. Remember, it was not long ago this team was the worst team in baseball. They had the worst record in baseball. Those games aren't going to be easier. Easy. The Red Sox changed the whole dynamic of their team, at least offensively, by trading away John Lester. I don't know. How easy is the run out for the Blue Jays here in these final 39 games?
I think they have a chance. There's no question. And they have some games, like you said, against weaker competition. But when you compare it to other teams around the game, I mean, you look at the Detroit Tigers, and starting this week, they have 17 games against the Twins and White Sox. I mean, that is just incredible for a team trying to line up some wins and really bank some victories going down the stretch.
And that's been the big reason why they've had so much success winning that division, right?
Totally.
Like they've got to beat up on those teams. So these, I mean, it hurts, of course, getting swept in Seattle to the Mariners. But if you take care of your business against the crappier teams, you should be fine.
Yeah.
See, I mean, not, I hate doing this because in baseball, you play 162 games. It's not like one game or a couple of games is going to make or break your season. But how important are these final 4 games of this road trip?
Well, I think right now the Blue Jays are on a 4-game losing streak. And if it gets to 5, okay. If it gets to 6, okay. But at a certain point, you've got to stop that. You can't go on an extended losing streak at a time that, like you said, that the clock is ticking down and the Blue Jays are in it. I refuse to say that they're out of it. I was looking at the playoff odds this morning. 8% chance. It's not great. It's not nothing. They're in the mix. But if you go on a long losing streak, then you start to get in trouble.
Yeah, they've struggled to say the least recently. Part of that, though, is, well, I mean, and we've talked about it, and it's not like the Orioles have this guy either. They don't have that ace. They don't have that Roy Halladay, and who does, right? John Lester is one of those guys. David Price is one of those guys. I wonder, it's hard to project, but hope in baseball is a great thing. And Daniel Norris, what he's done in the minor leagues this season, starting in high A, going to double A, making his way to triple A, in 2 starts in triple A, he's been ridiculous. Like, he's been insane. Like, he struck out 12 yesterday in 5 innings. He's putting away everybody. And now the projections on him are that potential ace. Does this team, I don't know who you would pull out of the rotation to throw in a Daniel Norris, but that, I mean, that's a pretty desperation move to put Daniel Norris into the rotation. But doesn't this team need to start making desperate moves?
I don't know if I would put him in the rotation. I mean, like you said before, you have 5 starters who are at least deserving of the rotation spots at this point. But I think seeing Norris up here in some kind of capacity, out of the bullpen, maybe he can be that guy instead of, well, Todd Redmond has earned his chances this year. Yesterday, an ugly outing for Redmond. But if you have Norris coming in out of the bullpen and Sanchez, having those middle innings covered by guys who can really shut you down can make a huge difference. And maybe Norris can be one of those guys even as soon as a couple weeks from now.
And we talked before about chemistry, and maybe this is a situation where it needs a shakeup. You just need a new face. You need a guy who comes in with a lot of confidence and a lot of energy from the successes he's having in Buffalo, right? You bring him in, and, you know, by all accounts, he's one of the most easygoing, coolest guys. You know, we did a story on him in the magazine, and he's a really, like, easygoing, like, surfer.
Lives in a van down by the river.
Right? Like, he's chasing the perfect wave. Like, he gave away a lot of his $2 million signing bonus because he didn't want the money to change him. He's a cool guy. He's not going to rock the boat. He could come in, and, you know, maybe that's infectious.
I gave him short shrift. He had 13 strikeouts yesterday. Wow. Sorry. 5 2/3 innings, 3 hits. No walks either. And this is in AAA. So, yeah, he has looked solid, to say the least. But you remember when Aaron Sanchez came up to this club, got a little bit of a boost. Like, not only did he perform well, but it seemed like there was a little more excitement. And it's hard to see if that or understand whether that actually carries over into the clubhouse. But I know as fans and following on Twitter and as someone that follows this team through the media, I mean, it seemed like it gave a little bit of a jolt of electricity to this team.
And I think that the reason it had that effect on the Blue Jays is because these are really talented players. And ultimately, You know, we can talk about sequencing and we can talk about should they have made a move. It comes down to talent on this team, and Norris has plenty of talent. So he's a guy who can come in, maybe get some quality innings for the Blue Jays down the stretch, and that could be enough of a nudge. He's not going to be the next Roy Halladay or anything like that, at least right away, but it could be a nudge in the right direction.
And it's too early to have this conversation, to look ahead to next season, but really, all is not lost for the future of this team. Now, you only have, I mean, the clock is ticking on Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Bautista, right? And there were some reports actually a couple of weeks ago that if things go sour for this team, they might be looking to get out this offseason. This is a depressing conversation. And again, it's too early to have it. But if you've got Norris as something or a potential ace, and you've got Stroman, Hutchison is, okay, middle of the rotation type of guy. And R.A. Dickey is, you know, your third, fourth. I mean, you might have a little bit more pitching depth. And I don't know, maybe not all is lost when you talk about all those prospects that have been traded away, like Noah Syndergaard and Travis d'Arnaud. Could be a promising future for this team.
Definitely. And I think pitching is so hard to come by in free agency and trades. Anthopoulos has tried. I don't know how many times in the last couple of years he's talked about the trade discussions he's had with a view toward acquiring starting pitching. Hasn't happened for this team. But like you said, Ben, I mean, they have a lot of pitching coming through their system. And going into next year, not that we're having that discussion, but you do have a sense that there is some pitching depth to go forward with.
Right. And just for team outlook and sort of for the fan base, changing the story even so slightly around the team this time of year, you know, like the story that we're talking about, the Jays losing streak, the Jays out of the wild card by four games, you know, if the story even, you know, modicum becomes, hey, Norris is coming and Norris is striking out 13 guys in 5.2 innings in AAA. Hey, we've got a guy who's coming in who could be a potential ace, not a number two or three guy, number four guy, not an end of the rotation starter. Like, we may have the next Roy Halladay for this team, you know, even if that's a stretch. That is something to talk about and gets the fans excited, right? Other sports have, you know, the draft coming up and that sort of thing. And they subtly do that, you know, like, hey, who's coming up? Who's the next guy? Here, Daniel Norris is coming in.
And I don't think he has to be anything close to the next Roy Halladay. If he's the next Drew Smyly, that's a win for the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Honestly, if he can be someone who's even a capable mid-rotation starter, that would be a huge win. It's just so hard to get those guys. And I think that at this point, the Blue Jays definitely seem intent on moving him to the highest level.
Yeah, and Alex Anthopoulos was, by all accounts, watching that start yesterday pretty intently. And how can you not be impressed by what Mr. Daniel Norris was able to do? When we come back, Premier League season is underway and Spurs just took a red card. They are scoreless with West Ham. Manchester United lost their opening game of the season. Is there a carryover effect after the World Cup and excitement as far as soccer is concerned? We'll find out coming up next. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Ben Nicholson-Smith, Craig Battle. I'm Ben Ennis. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's on Sportsnet.ca right now, here's Dave Zarum.
In a dingy, no-frills gymnasium in Toronto's east side, the next generation of Canadian basketball stars are going to work. Tyler Plummer, Javon Blair, Anthony McNish, and a host of others. Chances are, you don't know the names on the back of the jerseys. Yet. But by now, even the most casual Canadian Hoops fan will recognize the name on the front.
Yo, we notorious, huh? Ain't nobody can bang with us. Rascal checkmate, crossing down the thrust. Shot clear, coming down with the northern touch.
With alumni that includes Andrew Wiggins, Tristan Thompson, Tyler Ennis, and Melvin Ejim, and your senior team that boasts four players in the top 100 in North America, CIA Bounce has established itself as a behemoth in the increasingly competitive world of club basketball. Over the course of the summer, I'll take you behind the scenes of Canada's preeminent youth sports program. You'll meet the stars of tomorrow. You'll see the work put in by nearly 150 kids across all age groups. And you'll get to know the dedicated coaches and volunteers who've been on the front lines of this movement since day one.
Fans can find this story and more on Sportsnet.ca, Canada's home for sports news, analysis, videos, and features. Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Goodson waiting, Routledge in the box as well. Jefferson Montero and Wayne Routledge. And Sigurdsson it's in! Schwartzy had their lead back!
Sportsnet Magazine live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis along with Ben Nicholson-Smith and Craig Battle of Sportsnet Magazine. The Premier League got underway this season on Sportsnet. You heard it right there. Swansea beating Manchester United to open up the season. Red Devils fans freaking out, especially after the way last year finished. Not a great start to this year. Supposed to be an easy couple of games for United to get their feet wet under new manager Louis van Gaal. That hasn't worked out, at least through one game. Right now on Sportsnet, it is Tottenham and West Ham. Now, guys, I know you're not huge soccer experts or anything, but I am kind of interested as to the way the average sports fan views a season opener or, you know, an overall season like the Premier League, a league like the Premier League, especially after a World Cup year where we were all exposed. I mean, the general sports fan, you don't even have to be a sports fan to have paid attention to the World Cup. It is just an event overall. And we've been talking about it for 20 years in North America that soccer's ready to break through and be one of those top three sports that people watch. But is the Premier League a little bit more on your radar than it was before, Craig?
Yeah. I think it absolutely is. And I think you get some nice carryover from the World Cup. You learn names that you didn't know before as a casual soccer fan. You start asking where they play. You start finding out that, yeah, they're, you know, all huddled up in the Premier League and La Liga. And there's good carryover. And I think sort of as the more reading I've done, just sort of as crossover happened, you know, it's interesting to me that the Premier League is sort of broadening out, like that it was a big four for a long time. Man City made it a big five, and now It's perhaps a big seven with Everton and Tottenham, you know?
Yeah, and it is funny how there are Premier League teams kind of associating themselves with MLS teams. New York City FC, Manchester City play at Yankee Stadium. Mm-hmm. I wonder if the discussion doesn't pick up in the coming years. We always talk about the NFL having a team in London, right? That'd be kind of interesting to see a Premier League team in New York City. They could almost do it, right? It would be difficult, but the Premier League generally plays one game a week. You could do it. Be pretty brutal travel for some of those guys, but same deal, the NFL. I don't know. You'd have to do like road trip type things.
Yeah, I think it would definitely be very taxing for those players. And it would probably lead to a whole other discussion about that, but it would be a lot of fun. I think the appetite for that top level soccer is here. You see it anytime there's an exhibition game. Maybe they're not playing their top players, but there's still a lot of interest in watching those games.
Go ahead, Craig.
Well, it seems like they're making, you know, nice inroads just sort of into European soccer in general here, you know, like the MLS All-Star game playing Bayern Munich. It's interesting the way that, like there is such an effort. There is such a sports fan base here that, you know, is sort of untapped for soccer, at least, you know, still somewhat untapped. And they only benefit the FIFA and, you know, global soccer only benefits by sort of making those inroads.
You know, the conversation that always intrigues me when we're talking about soccer is the way the money is spent. And producer Matt Brown doing a good job digging up this piece of information. 20 top flight clubs have invested an estimated £647 million this offseason. The figure could reach £1 billion, right? And you think about European society as a whole, very much left-leaning, certainly more so than the United States and even Canada, really, with the social programs and the distribution of wealth and all that. And this society is more an open market in North America. But you look at our sports leagues in Europe, it's very much the opposite. You got the money, you can have the best team. You can outspend everybody. There are no caps. In Spain, Barcelona and Real Madrid just outspend absolutely everybody, picking up whoever they want. You can sign kids at like 12 years old that come up through your academies. Whereas in North America, we have drafts, we have salary caps. Very much a different sporting society when you're comparing the two. And shouldn't we want, as citizens of a city here in Toronto, that is a top five city population-wise, all that in North America, shouldn't we want a more open open sporting landscape so that our sports teams could outspend everybody?
It would definitely benefit Toronto-based teams, I think.
Right?
You look at what the Leafs were like before the salary cap era. And
how'd that work out as far as Stanley Cups, though, Ben?
Well, I think that's another discussion, really. But, you know, I think even at the very broadest level, you have an artificial cap on the number of teams that you can have in a sport. I mean, if you could have more than 30 baseball teams, there would be more than 30 baseball teams. Someone would have a team in Nashville, in Montreal, in Vegas. These things would happen, but it really artificially limits the number of teams that you can even have, which isn't, you know, you could call that an anti-capitalist move if you wanted to go that way.
I wonder as well, it's funny because we have soccer. MLS is, you know, it's on the rise. It's a nice little league. It's nowhere close to anything you've got in Europe. I think it's actually, attendance-wise, pretty close to what they have in Mexico, the Mexican League, Liga MX. But that league, Major League Soccer, does not operate like any other soccer league in the world. They have the playoffs. That's a foreign thing in Europe. I mean, Champions League, there's single elimination. It does get to that point. But any league, you just play the games. In the Premier League, you play everybody twice, home and away, 38 games. Whoever has the most points at the end of the season is your champion. So that means that there's like five-ish teams. The start of the season, it's only about five teams who have a shot of winning the title. So that means if you're some middling club, 10th place means something to you. Can you imagine if in baseball there were no playoffs? I mean, it would really put an importance on the regular season. And you know, it wasn't that long ago we only had one round of playoffs. It was World Series, and your two league winners met in the World Series. Can you imagine, Craig, though, you get rid of the playoffs. Can the North American sports fan deal with no playoffs and not having a chance at the outset of a season of winning a title?
Oh, no, not a chance. You know, it comes back to the randomness conversation we were having before. You know, there is the idea that, you know, like your World Series winner is your World Series winner, but they might not have been the best team. But you have that opportunity if you can make the playoffs, if you can get in that one game wild card that, you know, hey, sky's the limit. You can do whatever you want. You're in the show. You know, you can make it. And I think that like semblance of hope is a bit of a double-edged sword, but it actually keeps you involved and it keeps you interested. Yeah, if we knew that the only possibility the Jays had this season was winning everything, you know, like winning more games than the A's, we would never, never
right. Care. Right, but that's the way it works. And like it would, you know, the NBA, we're going to have a nice NBA discussion coming up after 11 o'clock about the Raptors and their outlook. But there are a lot of, I mean, mid-season NBA games where you think, well, I mean, even the players playing in this thing must realize this game means next to nothing, right? You're especially for teams that have had histories of success. I mean, so many times we've seen Greg Popovich sit his starters in a midseason game. You just wouldn't have that if every game meant something and there were no playoffs. That would be a cool aspect of it, I guess.
For sure. And I think that one thing you get when you do have the playoffs is you get the possibility of an upset. And as a fan, even if it's not your team, just watching, say, an NFL game and you have, say, the Patriots are undefeated that season, you want to watch and tune in to see, could an upset happen? Might this be the day that they lose? And if you don't have playoffs, that can't happen.
I agree with you, but isn't that like it's kind of taking a fairness out of it? It's like you play all these games, especially in baseball, and baseball is a little different than the other sports because it is only 10 teams that make the playoffs, and the regular season does have a little bit more of an importance. But shouldn't you play all these games? Shouldn't they be more valuable?
Well, anybody who's played a season of fantasy sports, it feels that a little bit, you know, like you can dominate your regular season head-to-head matchup all the way through. And then all your best players don't wind up playing in the finals. You get smoked and you feel like I've just lost out on the money I put in here.
I feel like you're talking directly to me, Craig, because I've led my baseball fantasy league all season by like 20 games. I'm going to get smoked in the playoffs, aren't I?
Yeah. You probably are. You're probably going to lose your two best starters. You know, like they're going to go down or their team's not going to be in it. So they're just not going to play. Yeah. We'll shut them down. You know, like that's the worst three words for a fantasy player. Oh yeah, shut them down. You know.
Yeah.
Just as far as the competitive nature of a fan and a team in North America, it's like the American dream. You know, like you want to be able to think that you can come from nothing to something, and that's so ingrained in North American sports culture. I get absolutely like in the NBA and the MLB that mid-season game, and it's like, well, winning this or losing this isn't really going to change things for us, or at least it doesn't feel like it's going to change things for us. So you don't necessarily get as far up for it if you're a player. And yeah, I mean, if you're in the Premier League, there's no, oh yeah, this is a meaningless game. It doesn't happen. So no. That's a nice benefit. But
yeah, and if you're a Crystal Palace fan, if you draw Manchester United or Manchester City, that's like a huge moment in the history of your franchise. We only got about a minute here, and maybe we'll revisit this topic of conversation. But the Tony Stewart situation from a week ago with the hitting of Kevin Ward Jr., who got out of his car and is passing away. NASCAR has decided to open up a rule here that will outlaw drivers from getting out of their car if they've been in an accident. This is just, it seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it does. And it's a very sad situation. It's tough to respond quickly in the aftermath of a really tragic event like that, but it seems like a call that makes sense.
I'm just wondering, because it certainly wasn't a premeditated thing that Ward did, you know? I feel like it was done in the heat of the moment, and I wonder what the penalty is, because...
guess that's what they're trying to cut down on.
Oh,
is people, yeah, I know you're upset, whatever, but you're going to be punished if you get out of your car.
Absolutely, and yeah, like, you know... I'm sure this is going to possibly be a financial thing or something like that. Like, and I hope it's sort of enough to override the knee jerk reaction to do something that could get you in trouble.
When we come back, the Blue Jays, as we mentioned, starting to slide down the American League wild card standing, still in it as we speak, but it's desperation time as they are four games back of the Seattle Mariners. The Detroit Tigers now not in a playoff spot either. We will break down some of the American League wild card contenders, and could that include the Tampa Bay Rays? I kind of sort of think so. Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
If it's a sports story you're talking about, you can guarantee they'll be talking about it. Unless it's something like arena football. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. I am Ben Ennis alongside Ben Nicholson-Smith and Craig Battle of Sportsnet Magazine. The Toronto Blue Jays resuming their series against the White Sox today on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet. Disappointing 11-5 loss yesterday as Marcus Stroman was roughed up big time. It'll be Mark Burley facing his old team and John Danks, who's been brutal for the White Sox, but a lefty. And the Blue Jays, we know, have had their issues with left-handed pitchers. 7-10, first pitch on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and Sportsnet. So you look at the way the American League wild card standings look right now. The Blue Jays dropping to four games back as Seattle beating Detroit yesterday to take a half-game lead for that second wild card spot. So the Blue Jays just have to leapfrog Detroit, really. But the Yankees, half game back of the Jays, 4.5 back. They've lost 5 straight. Cleveland now getting back into the mix. They are 5 back of the second wild card. Tampa Bay at 500 at 61-61, 5.5 back. And if you want to nominally say the White Sox are in it, they're 8.5 back. And after that, I don't think anybody agrees that Boston is in the wild card race. But things are interesting, especially considering the teams that I mentioned that are in it that maybe we're not necessarily used to saying they're in it. Kansas City leads the American League Central. This is a team who hasn't, I mean, they won the World Series in 85. That was the last time they were in the playoffs. The Seattle Mariners, last time they were in the playoffs, 2001. And if those two teams make the playoffs, gentlemen, that means the Toronto Blue Jays will be the owners of the longest playoff drought in Major League Baseball because they haven't been in it since 1993. Ben, is Kansas City for real? What you've seen out of them?
I think they're good enough to make it. And at this point, they've already banked enough wins that I think we're going to see them in October. And like you said, at that point, that's going to mean the Jays have the longest playoff drought in pro sports. But, you know, the Royals to me are a decent team. I don't think that we're going to be talking about them 30 years from now necessarily, like we are the 85 team with George Brett and that incredible run that they went on defeating the Toronto Blue Jays in their first playoff appearance. But, you know, I think the Royals, James Shields is enough to scare you in a potential one-game playoff or playoff series. But you look at that offense, that lineup to me, not a very good one.
I don't understand really how they've gotten it done with that lineup. Now, they've had a couple of big, big-time winning streaks here, 10 games early in the season to take over first place in the Central, but only for three games before they fell out of it. This time, they have a little more staying power. But you look at their on-base percentage, the guys that take walks, those guys really, like, don't exist on that team, which is weird that they've been able to score the runs they have recently.
Definitely. And Billy Butler, he has really turned his season around. He started off very badly for them and really was having an awful year until of late he's actually been hitting. So if he's a guy that can kind of sustain that for them, that would be huge because they really need some kind of firepower.
Yeah, they don't have a whole bunch of it. So they lead the Detroit Tigers by a game and a half. And Craig, the Tigers were this team. They make this huge deal to pick up David Price at the non-waiver trade deadline, a guy that we didn't even think would move because he's got another year on his deal and maybe it would be an offseason move for the Rays because they were still in it. Well, Rays are still in it despite trading him away in a package that a lot of people thought was an underpay for one of the best left-handed starters in all of Major League Baseball. Since then, the Tigers have completely fallen on their face. I mean, shortly after that, they lost 3 out of 4 to a pretty hapless Yankees team. The bullpen still has issues. Can you imagine, Craig, if the Tigers didn't make the playoffs after making that huge deal?
I honestly don't know whose head's going to roll, but somebody's has to, right? I mean,
Dave Dombrowski's had his great moments, but that would be one that he would look back on as one of his worst. Even though, right. Well, I mean, they would have David Price for a whole nother year.
It's almost public relations around this are kind of amazing. Everybody was talking, you know, like, is this the greatest starting five ever assembled? And that is such an amazing compliment. Like, you know, like,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden you get a little injury, you get Verlander's sore shoulder. And then amazingly, they start falling out of this thing. And, you know, Miggy Cabrera hasn't, you know, done what he did the last couple of seasons. I honestly don't know what's going on with this team, but that is quite a disastrous follow-up to what was an amazing trade.
I think they're going to turn it around, though. And you look at this offense, it's a good one. Even when Cabrera isn't hitting, he posts an 800 OPS.
Yeah.
And even when he's doing that, you have Victor Martinez, Ian Kinsler, this is a team, JD Martinez. I mean, they can hit, they can put runs on the board. So I think they're going to be in it, especially with that weak schedule they have.
Yeah, say it's worth repeating. Well, how many games do they have left against the Twins and White Sox?
I believe it's 17 of their last 38 or 37
That's
games.
Ridiculous.
It's nuts.
Yeah, and the White Sox, they have some pieces. The Twins have been pretty hapless all season long, but that helps, certainly, when you're the Detroit Tigers and you're trying to make a run of it. But you look at the weakness of that Tigers team, the bullpen, and they tried, and Dombrowski tried to shore it up a little bit with Joaquin Soria, but he goes down with an injury, and Joe Nathan's been so, so bad. Ben, I mean, did they not do enough to address the one? I mean, starting pitching wasn't really a weakness. They went out and addressed it anyways. The bullpen was the weakness, and they didn't address it.
Well, they got Soria, and I think
that's one guy.
I know, but on paper, he's probably the best reliever that moved. So
yeah.
They get the best starter. They get the best reliever. You mentioned Dombrowski before, and he's a guy who's just not afraid to wheel and deal. What a great track record he has of making big-time moves that have worked out for Detroit and really turned them into a perennial contender. But, you know, it's going to be tough for them. They've obviously got some ground to cover. I think we're going to see them in October. And like you were saying, Craig, I mean, you look at that rotation. One through four, they are just stacked. And you don't want to face that team in October.
I don't. Another part of the Dombrowski thing that I was confused about, and I think a lot of people in baseball were confused about, Ben, was the Doug Fister trade in the offseason. I know it wasn't a big deal when they had all their guns, and even before the David Price trade, and Drew Smyly was doing a great job, and Rick Porcello still is doing a great job, and Verlander was healthy, wasn't great, but Max Scherzer was Max Scherzer. And Anibal Sanchez was Anibal Sanchez and wasn't injured. So maybe there was no spot, really, for Doug Fister. But he's been great since being healthy for the Washington Nationals. And it's a deal that the Tigers didn't really get a whole lot back. Not to go back to ancient history, but whoa, what the hell were the Tigers thinking with that trade?
Honestly, it was surprising. And I didn't like it at the time for the Tigers. I don't like it now for them. I think that in time, that might end up being one of those rare whiffs that Dombrowski makes because... Mm. You look at the Nationals right now, Doug Fister is a huge part of what they're doing, and you can obviously never have too much pitching. Fister would help any team, the Tigers included, even if they wanted to give Smiley a spot in the rotation. They wanted to open that up for him. He proved them right. But still, that I agree with you, Ben. I think that was one of those probably rare moves where you're like, what happened here? Why did they do that?
Yeah, it was a bizarre one. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis, along with Ben Nicholson-Smith and Craig Battle. And another one of those teams that's kind of surprising to see in the mix. Maybe we shouldn't with the number of moves and, well, the amount of money they spent in the offseason. Seattle Mariners pick up Robinson Cano, who's been huge for them in the middle of that lineup. Still, they have issues scoring on occasion, but who cares when you've got like a team ERA under three, the best in baseball. They do not allow teams to score against them, whether that's starting rotation. It all starts with King Felix, and the Blue Jays got a taste of that firsthand, or the bullpen, which has been very good as well. They haven't been in the playoffs since 2001. Do they have the offense, though, to hang in there with just a half game lead for that second wild card?
I mean, I don't think their offense is very good, especially if it's anyone other than Kyle Seager and Robinson Cano. You're not really getting a ton of firepower from that team. But at the same time, they pitch so well, and in the playoffs, you're going to have a higher percentage of innings from guys like Felix and Iwakuma. That can really play up. So I think they're a team to watch, and if they get there, imagine in a five-game series facing Felix twice, Iwakuma in there. Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah, it would be crazy to be sure. You look down the list a little bit, and just a half game back of the Blue Jays, the New York Yankees, they made a couple of moves at the non-waiver trade deadline. Martin Prado, they picked up Brandon McCarthy. They did get Michael Pineda back as well recently, but they've lost five straight. And that was a team that I couldn't believe hung in it for as long as they did. And is it finally time to say, all right, the Yankees are who we thought they were. They're falling off the map, and at some point, probably Cleveland and Tampa Bay are going to pass them. Or is it, you know, they're the Yankees, so never count them out?
Oh, I think you can say that, you know, they are the Yankees. You expect to see them, you know, have a good September as opposed to a bad September. You expect to see them, you know, get better as the season goes on. But they're a team that run differential has been a subpar team.
They're still minus 40 in
minus
run
40.
Differential.
Yeah. They're plus two in the win column, but they're minus 40 in the run differential. Everybody above them, two teams below them in the wild card chase, are all positive run differential teams, right?
Yeah.
So the numbers say, you know, this is a lucky team that they shouldn't be where they are.
And that being said, I think you got to give the Yankees credit for putting all their chips in a sense, and really going out acquiring Brandon McCarthy, Martin Prado, Stephen Drew. They upgraded, and say what you will, they're not a good team. I completely agree, but they went for it. Derek Jeter's final season, second wild card. You have a chance, and they're trying their best. It's not going to happen, but they're trying to win.
And they've been treading water without their ace. So, I mean, they're 4.5 games back, and they haven't played with Tanaka in forever, right? So
yeah. And he might be ready by like the end of the season or something, or he may have to have Tommy John. But yeah, that's obviously a huge loss for them. The Derek Jeter thing's an interesting one. Would it be sad in a way if Derek Jeter's career came to an end with a sad sack Yankees team that misses the playoffs by six games? Or as a should Blue Jays fans just kind of be laughing at that? I mean, this is, think what you will about the New York Yankees and whatever, their team this year. There's no question Derek Jeter's one of the best baseball players of all time. So maybe it would kind of be a sad way to see him go out.
I think it could be. And Jeter, obviously, five World Series rings. He's basically played meaningful games his entire career and 3,400 hits. So he's definitely an incredibly accomplished player. But we're so used to seeing him in October. And I think when most people think about Derek Jeter, they're imagining him playing the Red Sox, diving into the stands. Your first thought is to think of Derek Jeter in October. So it would be a little weird to see him wrap his career up in a meaningless game against the Red Sox, who, oddly enough, aren't in the race either.
Yeah, I think the Red Sox are one of those teams that did a pretty good job at the non-waiver trade deadline as well. It's 11:13 Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet Magazine Live, Ben Ennis, along with Ben Nicholson-Smith and Craig Battle. Big news in Major League Baseball as well, as Rob Manfred named the new Major League Baseball commissioner. He will take over for Bud Selig in January. Manfred is a guy who there was a little bit of a indecision, I would say, or at least maybe some dissension among Major League Baseball owners. Took a couple of votes, reported as two or three, and then there were some owners that said, it was actually like closer to six. And then, of course, unanimous, 30-0 when it all is said and done. But Tom Werner, Red Sox chairman, was his biggest challenger. Ends up that Bud Selig's right-hand man is named the new commissioner of baseball. I guess, firstly, is there something to be made for the fact that it technically was unanimous. It wasn't unanimous, though. The owners, and specifically Jerry Reinsdorf, the White Sox owner, and Paul Beeston, Blue Jays president, those were some of the more vocal guys opposed to Manfred, who is basically Bud Light Light. He is Bud Selig's dude.
For sure. And I think that anytime you have so much at stake, and these guys are billionaires, huge egos, they all own franchises that are directly competing with each other. In a sense, it's not surprising that there would be at least a very frank and probably combative discussion about who would succeed Selig as really the top guy in baseball. So I think that in a sense, it doesn't surprise. But of course, like you said, 30-0, that's how it ends up being portrayed. And that's sure. how it's going to go down in history.
Yeah, I don't know. It is kind of weird. Now, this is a guy who, Craig, he's been at the forefront of this biogenesis stuff. He's been pretty hard and maybe overly aggressive and very close to being illegal in his mannerisms at trying to collect information and paying pretty scummy guys for information. That's part of his legacy. Another part of it is also the labor peace that Major League Baseball has enjoyed recently since that no World Series year of 1994, and that will be the big issue. And I guess that's probably why some of the teams that want more money, Jerry Reinsdorf wants to be a little harder on the players, wants to negotiate harder. What's Rob Manfred looking forward for the next 20 years or whatever, however long he's a commissioner? What is going to be his biggest challenge? Will it be the drug stuff? Will it be the labor peace stuff? Or is there something I'm not even thinking about?
I mean, there's all the host of small things. You know, like people want to talk about replay again. They want to talk about the pace of the game. They want to talk about making games quicker. You know,
I wonder if that's a little thing, because that seems like a big thing. It might tie into the fact and the numbers suggesting that younger people aren't into this game anymore.
Right. And I mean, you know, there is sort of, we need to know where the next fan base is. People talk about, the NBA growing, like the massive influx of young people. And they don't necessarily say the same thing about baseball. Baseball's fan base is aging. So, yeah, like they definitely need to figure out a way. And, you know, just what we've seen with social media and, you know, a million things going on all at once. Nobody knows how to focus on one thing anymore. And baseball is a game that requires, you know, like you to put in the work to pay attention, and then you get more out of it. Anyway, every other game is set up to be quick hits and dunks and highlights and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think he's got those things working against him, but or at least, you know, challenges going forward. But I think the next labor piece and continuing labor piece, especially considering that some owners seem to really want to take a hard line in the next round of negotiations, is there, you know, are they going to put a salary cap back on the table? And how does that go over? And No, exactly. Like in the MLBPA, traditionally the strongest union in sports, isn't necessarily that anymore. They're under a non-lawyer is running them for the first time, I believe. You guys can correct me on that, but
yep.
Tony Clark. Is he going to be able to stand up to a guy who's been depicted as a bit of a bully?
We're all hoping that there's no more work stoppages for this league, and you figure they've figured it out. And I wonder, Ben, I mean, this is, you can say whatever you will about the declining national TV ratings and World Series ratings the last 10 or so years continue to go down, and fewer young people are into Major League Baseball. But the fact remains, I mean, maybe in the history of Major League Baseball, it's in a better place financially right now. So you figure, you got all this money, can't you share it? Why would that be such an issue? But I guess it could be.
For sure. And I think anytime you're dealing with $9 billion, anyone with a stake involved, even if it's the umpires or the players or the owners, of course, everyone's going to want to get the biggest piece that they can. And it would be a tremendous shame if there were any kind of labor stoppage. We have, luckily enough, for the last 20 years avoided that. But for a long time, before Manfred officially joined Major League Baseball, obviously long before Tony Clark started running the Players Association, there was a ton of labor unrest in baseball, and having gotten away from that, I think has actually played a big role in making baseball a $9 billion industry that people, okay, maybe It's an aging demographic. But you look, you go down to Rogers Center, there are a ton of young people there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm 28 and I talk to my friends. They care a lot about the Blue Jays. So I think it is appealing to young people.
That's exactly it. They care about the Blue Jays. And the local TV numbers for major league teams are good. That's where they're getting all this money, is from the local TV deals. But these young people you're talking to, Ben, do they care about even Yankees, Red Sox in the middle of the season? Do they care about the World Series if the Blue Jays aren't in it?
Well, I think that definitely in this market, and this is probably true more broadly, but you're going to see people who care first and foremost about their team and the team that they know. I mean, I know a lot of people who can tell you all about Melky Cabrera and his switch hitting ability and his contract status, but you ask them, I don't know, about who's say Kyle Seager, okay, playing the Mariners last week. They don't know, and that's fine. That's the way sports work, and I certainly can't tell you who's the starting power forward for Charlotte, but at the same time, I think that definitely is true.
And it's interesting, this year and last year, the Yankees had, you know, season-long goodbye parties for two of baseball's crossover big-time celebrities, and baseball lacks the next guy who is that famous
player. Mike Trout should be that guy. Why isn't Mike Trout the guy that the LeBron James of baseball? He's not. You show any grade five boy in Canada a picture of LeBron James and Mike Trout. Obviously, everyone knows who LeBron James is. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you maybe 10% of young people know who Mike Trout is. Why is that?
I have absolutely no idea why that is. You know, it seems like there's sort of a lack of endorsements. LeBron James is he's a bit of a brand unto himself, and he made that a point. And there were certain people who, you know, ripped him to pieces for that when, you know, LeBron was going bad, or at least, you know, was turning heel. But, There does seem to be, like, the more you put into it, like your social media presence and the you know, the people you associate with and the different products you endorse all play into that. And Trout just doesn't seem to have that reach. But I mean, Ben and I talked about it in the magazine a while ago. Albert Pujols, the guy in the same team, you know, has done as much or more than Derek Jeter has. And he's unlikely to get this, you know, round the league, you know, like
adulation.
Exactly. Like, it's just sort of, There are guys who are doing things outside that major media market of New York that just don't get the credit for being sort of, like, you know, the best in the game or for carrying the league.
And partly I think it's just the nature of baseball. I mean, you add Mike Trout to any team. Let's say next year he's somehow playing for the Houston Astros. Well, the Astros would still not be a very good team. Whereas you put LeBron James anywhere in the NBA, and correct me if I'm wrong here, guys, but I think he makes any team a contender, probably a 45 or 50 win team on his own. So in baseball, you just don't have that impact that you can make as one guy on a team.
Yeah, and I mean, the LeBron James thing has already happened. They put him on a pretty terrible Cleveland team before he went to Miami, and he got them to an NBA final. So we've done that experiment. Something we kind of glossed over here when talking about the young people and Rob Manfred's some of the challenges when he takes office in January, at the end of this season. Is the game too slow? Is it, I mean, if a game ends in under 3 hours, it's almost like, wow, that was a quick game. You'd be hard pressed to find an NBA game that goes longer than 2.5. Soccer, Premier League season just cranked up. Those games, the broadcasts are done in 2 hours. It's pretty enjoyable. You know, you can set your watch and know that you're not investing the good portion of your day. Now, I know it was a freak thing, but 19 innings, Blue Jays play, and it's almost 7 hours long. Is the game too long, and is there something we can do about it, Craig?
I'm not sure what you can do about it, honestly. Like anytime you bring up, like, a pitch clock, people start to point out the flaws in a pitch clock, and, like, what's the penalty for you know, and you guys can tell me if that's been discussed, and they've figured out the absolute rule around that, but the game is too long. It does take too long. I checked the clock last night after the third inning, and I think we were in like an hour and 40 minutes. And, you know, obviously, Stroman getting roughed up, having a second pitcher come in, Jenkins coming in the first inning, slows the game down a bit. But, wow, it goes on. And that's, you know, like you said, like, a soccer game ends after 2 hours, and maybe there's a couple minutes of extra time. But you're dealing with a third inning. You're a third of the way into the game, and you're almost at full time for a soccer match. Like, people don't have the amount of time, or at least don't want to spend that amount of time on an epic game.
Playing devil's advocate here for a second, with the 19-inning game 7 hours later, but at the same time, record TV numbers and It was an incredibly compelling game. I was there, stayed the entire 19 innings, and it was great. It was really entertaining. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's not so much that baseball is too long, but there are just stretches in that game. You mentioned the pitching change, Craig, right. And I think that sometimes what you have during a baseball game is you have these lulls during the game, and I wonder if there's a way around that. I mean, my buddy Nathan has the suggestion, mic up the pitching coach. Every mound visit, it's on air. So then that way you know what's going on. Then the game doesn't get shortened, but at least it's more entertaining during the time that you're committing as a fan.
And David Ortiz is a lightning rod for this in his in-between swing, sort of like he steps back, he readjusts his gloves, he passes, you know, everything.
Yeah.
And that takes time, you know, like at once in a game when nobody would notice it. But when he does it every time, it just sort of adds up seconds here, seconds there. So that can be curtailed a bit. But then is that dealing with a guy who's incredibly superstitious, who needs to do that just to feel comfortable stepping into the box?
He doesn't need to do it.
He might say he does, right?
Like, I'm sure he'll say he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. And it is, you wonder, because the NFL... those games aren't short, right? Football games aren't short. They're not done in generally under 3 hours, but you don't hear the complaint about that. Now, maybe part of that is they only play once a week, and football is football, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're Major League Baseball, you're trying to get to where football is. Mm-hmm. So you need to eliminate the lulls. Part of it as well, I generally think replay this year has gotten a bad rap. I think it's been a great addition to the game. The thing that has to go, and I don't know why this was instituted and why people thought that this was a good idea, the stupid managers going out there waiting for the signal to challenge. Why? I mean, in football, you don't get to, well, I mean, sure, you can try and look at the big screen and see if you can see the replay, but it's not like you're given the time to look at the replay before you have to throw the challenge flag. If you think it's a challengeable call, just throw the flag.
100%. And I think that's one of the big things that baseball has to deal with.
Yeah, it's a button you push, right? You
know, like,
people talk about centralizing replay for multiple sports. Like, I don't even like it in football where the ref runs to the middle of the field and he says, hey, there's a challenge in the field. We already saw there's a challenge in the field.
Yeah,
the
just flag go is do out. It.
Yeah. And then why is that guy running back to the sideline and putting the thing over his head? But at least that one he can control, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, you're getting better access to the replay. And you can watch it four times. Yeah, I hate it when we see a replay. It's obvious the guy's out in the first one. They'll watch it 15 times because they're looking for the, oh, there's one more angle. Mm-hmm. There's one more way that we can look at this. And it's like, we know he's out. You know, like, you know, let's just move on. Let's just get out of here.
And MLB is making big efforts on this front. We have a piece about it on Sportsnet.ca coming up today by Shai Davidi. They're making big efforts. It's just a slow process. And mm-hmm. I think year one, all things considered, it's probably gone maybe a little better than we might have expected.
Yeah, they got to get rid of that stupid home plate collision rule. They got to figure that one out too. That's the worst one. But I think, you guys agree that they're going to get rid of this umpires on the field to before the challenge for next year, right?
I think
that's got to go.
It's weird pageantry. It doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, it is very bizarre. When we come back, Raptors announced their schedule. Sunday afternoon games pushed back a little bit. They're going to play some at 3:30, some at 7 o'clock. A few more Saturday night home games too, which is interesting, competing with the Maple Leafs. And they're on national television 5 times, and Drake gets whacked with the $25,000 fine, at least the team does, for Drake's comments about Kevin Durant. We'll talk about that. Plenty more coming up next. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's on Sportsnet.ca right now, here's Sean Greig.
The NFL season is almost here, and we're getting you ready with our Adopt a Team series.
Are you ready for some football?
In the 32 days leading up to kickoff, we're asking the questions that really matter for all 32 teams. Can Johnny Football make up for the mess the Browns made in the offseason? Is Andrew Luck enough to carry the Colts to the Super Bowl? Will the Bears be able to turn around last season's dismal defense? And does Cam Newton care enough about winning? We detail every team's key players, break down roster changes, and analyze how they're scheming for the season. We'll even recommend the team that best suits your personality. Are you a fan of slick offense? Then the Green Bay Packers are your boys. More into underdog teams on the rise? Look into the Arizona Cardinals. Or do you just dig a really awesome guitar solo? If so, the Kansas City Chiefs are the team for you. We're posting one a day until September 4th, so be sure to check out the Adopt a Team series at sportsnet.ca/NFL.
Fans can find this story and more on Sportsnet.ca, Canada's home for sports news, analysis, videos, and features. Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Sportsnet Magazine Live. I am Ben Ennis alongside Ben Nicholson-Smith and Craig Battle. The Raptors will open their season Wednesday, October 29th at home against the Atlanta Hawks. A 7:30 start, which is kind of weird. The Raptors doing that this year makes a lot of sense because it's impossible to get anywhere in the city. Drake, well, maybe not Drake specifically. The Raptors at least $25,000 lighter in the pocket after Drake did make a reference to Kevin Durant joining the Raptors when he's a free agent at a concert this summer. Guys, I look at this thing. Tampering, it happens all the time. And it's kind of interesting that it is Drake, and he's a global superstar, and he's rap sensation, and he's the global ambassador. But $25,000 to this team, to this franchise, to Drake, even if he had to pay it, it's money well spent, right?
It absolutely is. I mean, yeah, like they're not paying Drake anything for his association with the team. So, you know, it essentially amounts to the cheapest salary that they could possibly get his services for. It's not that big of a deal for the team or the league. You know, the league isn't, $25,000 windfall. We're going to spread this around. It's funny because Michael Grange was talking on the website this week, sportsnet.ca, that it's good for both the league and the team that it happened. Drake talking about Kevin Durant and inviting Kevin Durant to a concert and getting into the news cycle in a time when it's predominantly dominated by MLB playoff races and NFL is good. You know, like they basically want to talk about the superstars. They want to get the superstars out there. They want to get a bigger stake for the Raptors. The Raptors making the American news cycle doesn't hurt, and it's certainly worth $25,000.
Every team needs to find a rapper to join their teams to start tampering with other superstars, right? Like that needs to be a thing now.
For sure. I mean, you look at Drake too, though, and talking about Kevin Durant joining the Raptors as a real possibility. I don't know how realistic that would have been a few years ago, but I think that there's maybe an extra edge to this Raptors team now with Drake and even having this be a real possibility.
Plus, Kevin Durant grew up a Raptors fan, which is weird for a guy who went to Texas and grew up in the D.C. area, I believe. So, I mean, it speaks to the time and how prevalent that Raptors team was in basketball circles with Vince Carter and Tracy McGrady and the like. So I mentioned the Raptors open up their season at home against the Atlanta Hawks. They actually have a whole bunch of home games to start the season. 9 of their first 12 are at home, including a big stretch of home games, 7-game homestand in the middle of November, November 7th against the Wizards until November 21st against the Milwaukee Bucks. All of those games at home. And Craig, that's nice. It's a nice way to start your season if it's what you prefer, I guess. But on the other hand, you better win those games because you're going to be headed out on the road a whole bunch after that.
Absolutely. And I mean, the Raptors are set up as a team with little turnover. They added Lou Williams, but they essentially secured their entire contributing team from last season. So they're set up to hit the ground running. And, you know, you better hope that they're able to win those games or at least, you know, come out 500 or better, right? But if they don't, that's going to set the team up for a really troubling, difficult November. No team, really responds well to a slow start or really wants to have to deal with that. And heading out on the road with a sub-500 record. And there's a lot of games in there that are actually quite tough. They play Oklahoma City. They've got Washington coming in. They've got Chicago coming in. So it's not like those are cream puff games. They might be home games, but they're not easily winnable ones.
You mentioned the lack of turnover with this Raptors team. And, of course, the spotlight's going to be on LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers and them being the favorites, not just to win the East, but to win the NBA title. But you often see this with new teams. And even when the big three got together in Miami, remember, it wasn't seamless. They started the season off pretty poorly. Mm-hmm. They did eventually end up making an NBA Finals, which they lost to the Dallas Mavericks. But we saw it in L.A. with that Lakers team with Steve Nash and Kobe Bryant and Dwight Howard. They didn't really mesh. It took them a while to figure things out. They never really did. But could there be an adjustment period for that team? And, I mean, are we a little bit too quick to anoint them champions already?
I mean, yeah, there's undoubtedly people really, really underrate. We talked about chemistry before in baseball, and does it actually matter? People really underrate continuity and chemistry in basketball. You really have to know where you're supposed to be on the floor, where your teammates are going to be. You don't want to know where you get your spots, you know, where you're going to get your points from. You don't want everybody standing on top of each other. Defenses are really intelligent, and they'll capitalize on poor communication and poor spacing. So this is the team that is eventually set up. They'll have a bunch of three-point shooters on the floor. They'll have spacing. They'll be able to essentially put, you know, Kyrie Irving or Kevin Love, should that trade, you know, go through.
Yeah, it looks like it's done. Pretty much.
It looks like it's done, but, you know, it's got a week before it can be official, right?
Yeah.
But that all takes time, and they've got a brand new coach. Their coach last season, Mike Brown, wasn't terribly creative, and I think people would be a little bit leery about what exactly these guys were going to do, because his Mike Brown coached LeBron in his first time in Cleveland, and their offense was essentially, hey, give LeBron the ball and hope that things work out. So their new coach, Dave Blatt, is a much more creative guy, and he'll get these guys working. But we see it takes time for these things to work out. That Miami Heat team you talked about started 9-10. That will get people curious and will get people wondering. And LeBron isn't as young as he was at that time.
None of us are.
No, none of us are as young as we were back when they were going
that. But you look at the Spurs, right? And I think you probably make a great point that probably applies to San Antonio, with Tony Parker maybe doesn't have the same first step quickness that he would have had as a first or second year player. Maybe Tim Duncan doesn't have the same explosiveness or power that he had when he first came into the league. But this team is still among the elite, obviously, of the NBA, because probably they have played together long enough that they have that chemistry together.
Oh, for sure. They definitely have chemistry. They've got a coach who understands their strengths and weaknesses. They're integrating a couple of peripheral pieces each year and integrating out a couple of peripheral pieces. Like, they've got their offense. They know what they're supposed to be doing. They're always adjusting. They're always adding things. But they're starting from such a solid foundation that you never really see this team have a hiccup. So, you know, you can count the Spurs as a 55-60 win team right now. You know that's exactly going to happen.
For Raptor fans, I wonder what'll be the bigger ticket. Will it be watching LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers come to town? They're going to be interested in seeing Andrew Wiggins and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Of course, this is all a little bit putting the cart before the horse, and it's not official yet, but it certainly seems like that deal is done. Wiggins and Anthony Bennett off to Minnesota and a first-round pick for Kevin Love coming the other way. I wonder, you know, Ben, well, who would you rather see? Would you rather see LeBron, or would you rather see the number one overall pick, maybe the best Canadian basketball superstar?
For me, LeBron, and it's not even close.
Really?
Not even close.
Not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit, because LeBron to me is the best basketball player. I'm a basketball fan. I don't claim to have any real inside knowledge of the game, but LeBron is such a compelling figure. You know, he is at his peak. Part of an extended peak, but he's at his peak. And I think watching him, getting the chance to watch him as a fan, is right up there with going to the Rogers Cup and seeing Roger Federer. It's up there with, you know, potentially seeing a guy like Messi or Cristiano Ronaldo, just an elite player. And Wiggins, for all of his potential, isn't at that level right now.
Yeah, obviously. And who knows where he will reach. But the Minnesota Timberwolves in Toronto on Wednesday, March 18th. That's the first time you get a chance to see Mr. Wiggins, and the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James, obviously going to spend a little bit more time playing the Raptors, being in the Eastern Conference. But I think it's a while until the Raptors face Cleveland.
I think that's until March as well.
Is it? Yeah, so it's March as well. So you're going to have to wait a while to see either of those teams. But you know what is interesting is that the Raptors are compelling viewing, not just for those games, but a whole bunch of other games, and it's not just here north of the border. In the United States, Raptors going to be on national television there four times. It starts on November 13th. It's the first game of that TNT doubleheader when they play the Chicago Bulls, who will have Derrick Rose back. They went out and picked up Pau Gasol, and already they were a playoff team. Disappointing exit last year to the Wizards in the first round, but seems like it's not just Canadians now that are into the Toronto Raptors and realizing that they've got some talent and they're actually a pretty fun team to watch. People in basketball circles south of the border are into this Raptors team as well.
I think that's becoming more and more true all the time. I mean, they've got, you know, for the first time since Bosch left, they've got an all-star. DeMar DeRozan made the team. Everybody said that Kyle Lowry should have made the East All-Star team last year as well. People understand that they are up and coming, that they have guys who can, you know, like people love watching Terrence Ross dunk. They love watching the highlights. I think that's a great way to get fans to pay attention and to keep an eye on you. And yeah, like the Raptors don't necessarily get Thursday night games, you know, like the marquee TNT game.
Can't remember the last time they were on one.
Yeah, no, I can't either. And so they've got two of those this season. Like you said, they've got Saturday games coming up as well. So they've got like sort of marquee night games. And it's an easy team to like. And I think a lot of people responded to whether they're a Raptors fan or not when, you know, Masai Ujiri went up. You know, he was talking to the people at what was the Jurassic Park they called it outside ACC.
F Brooklyn.
I think people responded to that. It's you know, a guy sort of putting his heart in his sleeve, and whether it was calculated or not, people, you know, we don't like the other team. We don't want the other team to you know, come into our building and dictate anything. Like we want to dictate the conversation, and people get behind that.
Can you remember a Toronto franchise in any sport that had more personality than this Raptors team? And it's not just the players on the court, but yeah, you mentioned it. It's Masai Ujiri, outspoken. It's Drake, who's a part of this franchise. He's not getting paid anything, but he is. I mean, they were fined because he is a member of the franchise. These guys are outspoken. They've got personality. It is, and it's kind of helped put this franchise on the map. I mean, how many Maple Leafs teams could you have said that about? I don't know. Not many. Blue Jays, really, could you have said that about? Certainly not this team. Kind of bland. Raptors kind of have a little bit of flair to them, it seems like.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that, you know, Tim Lewicki's helping out on that too, right?
You know,
like sort of getting out, repping the team, you know, like the, you know, every, he wants parades. He's planning the parade routes. Like he doesn't want to compete. You know, he came out afterwards and said, nobody's happy with this. You know, like I understand it's great to get into the playoffs and, you know, we held our own against Brooklyn. We lost the seventh game, but nobody in the organization is going to take that as a win overall. Like we want to win playoff series. We want to, you know, play extra home playoff games. We want to win titles. And I think people, are sort of responding to the sort of like the arrogance, the attitude. It's not necessarily arrogance, I think, but the fact that this team wants to win, that they want to go out and that they want to dunk on you and they want to become not just sort of the kid franchise from up north. They want to be better than that. I think that's going to sort of galvanize the fan base and, you know, the fan base across the country, because this team has, you know, traditionally been an Ontario supported team.
Yeah. Is it? And it's every Raptors game this year is going to be on national television in this country as well, which is a big step. Is it becoming more of a national thing, the Toronto Raptors? Is it becoming, the Blue Jays want to be Canada's franchise in Major League Baseball? I don't know if they've quite gotten there, but going to Montreal helps, and there's talk of maybe an exhibition game being played in Vancouver at some point. I don't know if they're quite there. Are the Raptors becoming that team because the Grizzlies are no longer in Vancouver? Are the Raptors becoming Canada's national team?
Well, I think they've taken steps in that direction. And I think one of those steps is winning. And that's something that is eluding the Blue Jays right now. Last four games, of course, reinforcing that. But I think really, if you want to gain the support of an entire country, the reason the Blue Jays had so much support 20 years ago was they were winning. And if the Raptors can sustain their success on the court, I think that would probably be their biggest step toward really taking a real hold of the potential sports market in Canada.
And they don't have the, you know, the LeBron James or the Kobe Bryant. They don't have that A1 superstar. But I think that their team, their roster construction going forward is set up to win them some games and, you know, make consecutive playoffs. They got to build some momentum.
Yeah, but what's the expectations are different now, right, Craig? Like it's making the playoffs isn't good enough. Right now they have to win a series. They took the Nets to seven games and had a shot at the end of that game to win it, came up short. What are the expectations for this team right now?
I mean, I think a top four finish in the East. You're in there with Cleveland and Chicago and perhaps the Wizards, perhaps the Hornets, the Heat will probably be in there as well. But yeah, you probably want that top four finish again. You don't want to take a backslide. You don't want to sort of squeak in. You don't want to have a setback. But yeah, you also do, you know, they've traditionally played Brooklyn in the playoffs. You want to be better than the rest of the Atlantic Conference, the Atlantic Division. You want to win that first round, and you want to have a hope of winning the second round. Like Washington came out of nowhere last year and did win that first round and move on. So they're coming from a standpoint of a team that's won a playoff series. Yeah, the Raptors have won one playoff series in their entire history. So they've got to get back there, and they've got to win that playoff series and maybe make that Eastern Conference Finals. Like that would be a great step forward for this team.
It'd be an absolutely fun season if they did. And yeah, LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers coming to the Air Canada Center for the first time December 5th on Friday at 7:30. That'll be a tough ticket. To be sure. Guys, thanks a lot for this. It's been great.
It's been fun.
This has been Sportsnet Magazine Live. Coming up next, I got an edition of Sportsnet Today. This is the Sportsnet Radio Network.